our spring fun drive. We've heard from so many listeners, and if we have not heard from you yet, we do need to hear from you soon, because we need to end this fun drive. When I first came in today, we were just over 50%, about 51% of the way towards our goal. Now we're at 54% because donations keep coming in, because folks know we are now in the second half of this fun drive, the downhill side of the slope. Once we climb this mountain, start heading back downhill, it always goes quicker. The second half of the fun drive, the second half of the funds we need to raise, always go quicker. Let's make it go as quickly as possible so we can get back to uninterrupted program. Uninterrupted programming here at Radio Catskill. And we can get back to putting one tongue in front of the other and make a little more sense when we talk on air. 845-482-4141. Call now, give now at 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. It's time for the local edition. And live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Coming up, we check in with Sullivan County Bureau of Fire because they attended the New York State Fire Coordinators Conference in Watkins Glen. We're going to talk about what they learned and what it means for fire safety in our area. But first up, as you may have heard, New York State budget is overdue and there's a lot that people are trying to see in the budget. Meanwhile, the Assembly and Senate are advocating for enhanced labor standards and increased protections for farmland in New York State. In relation to clean energy projects, developers, however, argue that these measures could impede the progress of the energy transition and New York's lofty climate change goals. Here to tell us more from New York Focus, once again, it's Colin Kinneberg. Colin, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Great to be back.
So, what's the main idea of this story? If you want to, did I set that up right? Is that what you're talking about here?
Yeah, I think so. So the bill I was reporting on is called the RAPID Act. It's a proposal that originally came from Governor Hochul in her budget proposal that came out this January. Basically, she is looking to help speed up renewable energy, mainly wind and solar, getting plugged into the grid. So that means, you know, building more wind and solar, but it also means, crucially, building more power lines to get those plugged in, to move all that power from where it's generated to where people use it, often in big cities. So this RAPID Act would basically, there's a kind of administrative reshuffle, but it could actually be pretty consequential in, apparently, according to advocates I spoke with, in helping speed up permitting some of those power lines and other things needed for the clean energy transition.
Right. And, you know, New York's got lofty climate change goals. And you start off your article by saying at this point, it's just about a cliche to say that New York is behind on building renewable energy and renewable energy infrastructure. What are some of the big barriers that New York's faces in its efforts to expand renewable energy?
Sure. And maybe I'll just give a little bit more context on what I mean when I say we're behind. So the state has written into law a target to get to 70% renewables by 2030. Right now, we're actually at about 50% statewide, which doesn't sound so bad, but most of that is coming from these big old hydropower dams in the north of the state. And actually on wind and solar, we're really only at about 4 or 5%. So there's a long way to go to fill that gap. And what's holding it up? It's a whole mix of things. You know, I think there's a storyline we've heard a lot, which is about local opposition to, you know, solar and wind farms going up in rural communities. So that's certainly a factor. There's also all of these kind of more essentially like bureaucratic things. You know, there are the physical power lines that I mentioned, but there's also this whole process called interconnection where you have to get your, you know, say your solar farm plugged into the grid at a certain point. And, you know, there are engineers who have to review that. There's a whole bureaucracy that goes along with that. And they're way backed up because they're not used to reviewing, you know, hundreds of solar projects at the same time. It used to just be, you know, one or two big gas power plants, for example. So that's a factor. There's a whole bunch of factors. But the permitting element, including for transmission lines, so that's the state saying basically, yes, okay, your project looks good. You can move forward, you know, with building it where you want to build it. That part has been pretty slow. They managed to speed it up on the wind and solar side, but now they want to do the same thing with transmission. So the power lines, essentially. So that's what this bill is trying to do.
On the assembly side, legislators are pushing for labor provisions. You quote Assembly Labor Chair Harry Bronson as saying, "We all support the idea of development of renewable and sustainable energy, but we can't say we're going to do that at the expense of the workforce." What is that labor concern?
Right. So I think what the assembly is trying to add to this bill is, you know, it's raised the hackles of some of the renewable developers because, you know, of course, they want to operate with as few constraints as possible and you know, keeping their costs down. But the labor parts of the bill aren't necessarily the most controversial. What they want to do is they want to impose so Buy American standards, essentially buying U.S. made, I believe it's steel, iron, and then other components. So for any projects that get public funding, I believe that's it anyway, but basically that renewable projects would have to, you know, buy American components to the extent possible. And then also that the developers would have to enter what's called labor peace agreements with unions. So, you know, basically promising that if there's a union election, they'll stay neutral and in exchange, the union has to agree not to strike or otherwise disrupt, you know, development. So that's the kind of labor side. It seemed like that there was support for that on coming from the Senate as well. I spoke to Senate Energy Committee Chair Kevin Parker, and he seemed to think that, you know, that was something that could get into a final deal, but we have yet to see any details on that front. So we're waiting to see.
And not that I want to just report on the controversy here, but you said like the labor side of this isn't the most controversial part of it. I'm wondering what are some of the more controversial sides, and they involve the use of land for solar.
Absolutely, yes. I think the part of this that's ruffled the most feathers by far is about farmland. Basically, you know, the way one climate advocate put it to me is that, you know, the state Senate, looking at this bill, is sort of taking it as an opportunity to relitigate not just this sort of transmission planning and permitting element that I talked about, but actually to relitigate how the state permits, you know, renewables in general, so wind and especially solar. And the Senate version of the bill would add a bunch of new requirements that developers would have to meet to build solar projects in general, to get permits from the state to build solar projects. And that would include a fee if they build on what's called prime farmland. You know, I spoke to one of the main backers of some of these farmland protections, and, you know, to her, it's a small price to pay, for these developers to pay to help protect, you know, a resource that I think everyone agrees is valuable, which is farmland. But yeah, there's been a lot of debate on that element of it.
What are some other things that stand out to you in this process and the rapid act?
Other things that stand out. I mean, I think, you know, there's been, let's see, I think it's testament to the growing recognition, not just in New York, but nationally, that there are so many different parts that have to fit together to, you know, make this transition from, you know, fossil fuels to renewable energy work. You know, it's not just building the energy, but it's getting plugged in, getting it plugged in at the right place at the right time, all of those sorts of things. And I think the state government is increasingly recognizing that. At the same time, there's only so much that the state can do on its own because there are so many other, you know, actors tied up in this transition. Obviously, there's the companies themselves, but we also, our grid is operated by it's technically a nonprofit that's not part of the state. So there's a bunch of reforms that are happening at that level. You know, some would argue not quickly enough. The federal government has a stake in this through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So, you know, I think the state is kind of trying to take a bite at the apple. And, you know, it seems like it's been pretty well received by developers, what the governor is proposing, and by clean energy advocates. But it's really only a small piece of the puzzle to, you know, getting more renewables plugged in faster.
Right. And that's kind of setting us up for where I really wanted to ask you to step back, because you report specifically on climate environmental politics in New York State. So, and you know, climate change, it's one of those things where people are like, oh, you know, it's moving fast, things are changing fast. Can we respond to this quickly enough after years of not really responding to it at all? I've got a similar question about New York State politics. It just follows from what you were just talking about. You're seeing this awareness among lawmakers. You're seeing a willingness to try to do things, but do you have a feeling that it could possibly be enough to meet these climate change goals in the time that New York State has laid out?
That's a very tough question. And I think people are increasingly pessimistic about that. I mean, when the idea of this RAPID Act was, you know, first floated, some of the reaction I got from, you know, people representing renewable energy developers was basically a little bit underwhelmed, that like, this is, you know, it can help, but there's just so much to do. And I think, you know, there, another headwind that I didn't mention has been basically, you know, inflation and the supply chain. A bunch of projects were canceled last year. And so the state has kind of had to scramble to get them, back on track. And that's very much still in progress. That's true of offshore wind, which are some of the, you know, really big key projects the state is counting on to meet these goals, but also the smaller, you know, wind and solar projects scattered throughout the state. So, I think pretty much everyone who's watching this transition is increasingly pessimistic that the state will get to 70% renewables by 2030. You know, with a lot of effort, they could get close, but it would be very hard for them at this stage to meet that mark, because, I mean, you know, just building one of these projects from start to finish, it tends to take longer than the amount of time we have left before 2030. You know, it takes, you know, somewhere in the range of 6-7 plus years. So the window is closing fast on us.
All right. Well, I know you'll be keeping an eye on it, so we'll be talking to you as you continue to follow this, because even if New York State doesn't fully meet these goals, it's clearly making an effort, and there's a lot of stories that are going to come just from that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Colin, thank you so much for talking to us. I'll remind listeners that the article is Clean Energy Transmission Battle Pits Speed Against Worker Farm Protections. And it's up now at nysfocus.com. It's also up at our website, wjffradio.org. And we've been talking to the reporter who wrote it, Colin Kinneberg. Thank you again for being here with us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Former President Trump is in real legal trouble, facing multiple serious criminal charges, all while he runs for president again. I'm Scott Detrow. Each week on All Things Considered, we dive into the latest courtroom drama and consider the stakes for American democracy. Catch up with us every Saturday or listen to the Trump's Trials podcast from NPR and stay with this NPR station for breaking updates and analysis.
Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Hi, I'm Laura, inviting you to join me for Laura Flanders and Friends. We like to say it's the place where the people who say it can't be done take a back seat to the people who are doing it. The news got you down? We just may lift your spirits. Again, that's Laura Flanders and Friends.
Laura Flanders and Friends starts tonight at 7 here on Radio Catskill. It's the new branding relaunch of the Laura Flanders Show. It's now Laura Flanders and Friends, and Laura will be here in person to help with this launch tonight and to ask you for your support, because it is Radio Catskill's Spring Fun Drive, and we need your support. Call now, 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141, or go to wjffradio.org to help us out. Make your donation there, 845-482-4141. Or WJFFradio.org. Right now it is the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And the Sullivan County Bureau of Fire attended the annual New York State Fire Coordinators Conference in Watkins Glen recently. The conference discussed safety, working with other agencies, and sharing knowledge among fire departments. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rabayo has more.
Recently, four representatives from the Sullivan County Bureau of Fire attended the Fire Coordinators Association of the State of New York annual conference in Watkins Glen. The attendees included Senior Deputy Fire Coordinator Tom Rotten, Chief Deputy Fire Coordinator Jack Halchek, Deputy Fire Coordinator Charlie Rampey, and Training Coordinator Joe Moore. They joined approximately 90 other coordinators and deputies from across the New York State. The conference focused on critical topics such as safety, collaboration with other agencies, and the sharing of knowledge and experiences among fire departments. John Hochschild, the Sullivan County's fire coordinator, emphasized the importance of these gatherings. He noted that the networking at the conference is invaluable for enhancing the safety and effectiveness of Sullivan County's firefighters.
It's a great networking opportunity for the coordinators. They have presenters that come in and talk about the training, talk about OSHA standards, talk about some incidents that occurred in their jurisdictions, and share their experience. And one of the things and one of the takeaways from the conference is to make firefighters' jobs safer and make sure everybody comes home. That's the most important thing, that our firefighters come home from every time we're dispatched to a call, whether it be tree and wires down to a working structure fire to a hazmat call. And then one of the presenters from Rockland County was presenting on the line of duty death for Jared Lloyd, who died in the nursing home fire, and the things that were shared from there. And unfortunately, every incident that we go to, we learn and make things better.
Jared Lloyd passed away in the line of duty while rescuing a resident from the Evergreen Court home for adults in Spring Valley. He was trapped under the rubble. You know, it's of course unfortunate that things like this do happen on the line of duty, but conferences like this sort of bring to light what can be done to help protect firefighters, help protect potential victims in fires, and what can be done better so that another family doesn't suffer this fate.
Helps, and it lets the fire coordinators know what upcoming things are happening in New York State and how it can be passed down to the coordinators and then passed on to the fire chiefs in the counties. It's a great conference, and I'm happy that our four, my three deputies and our training coordinator, were able to go this year.
Sullivan County Chief Deputy Fire Coordinator Jack Halchek went to this conference in Watkins Glen, and he talked about learning about the dangers of transportation of liquefied natural gas.
Liquefied natural gas, which is rare in this area, although I do believe that the resorts world uses liquefied natural gas for their heating. Schenectady County, there were two trucks carrying natural gas 2 weeks apart that had accidents. One was up against the bridge, and one went over an embankment. which creates a challenging scenario for emergency services. I have not experienced any, luckily, accidents with compressed natural gas in the area, but that's not to say it's not there. Another extremely interesting topic was the consolidation of four departments into one in Corning. And that's a situation that takes anywhere 4 or 5, 6 years. At first, not everybody bought into it. And then everybody, all four departments, actually three departments, bought into it and one wouldn't. And they ended up folding because they didn't fit into the fold. But the three departments that were left, they consolidated equipment. They still had three firehouses. They still had their own identity. But now all three departments were responding as the Corning Joint Fire District. So it was a win-win for everybody in that particular area. You had more firefighters responding to each call, and they were doing more training together. They were cross-trained on each other's apparatus. So that turned out to be a real win situation. Another one of the topics that was extremely important to firefighters throughout New York State is New York State is a OSHA state, so we follow the OSHA standards. And the OSHA standard that governs the fire departments is called a fire brigade standard, and it hasn't been updated since 1980. So you can imagine the number of updates from 1980 to today, and the major bulk of the body of this upgraded standard is 606 pages long. In addition to that, it also references 22 other standards that are part of the OSHA standard. That's a lot of information to digest.
One of the incidents that the coordinators looked over was from the deadly I-84 bus crash that happened in Orange County in October of last year. Jack discusses how a coordinated effort led to saving lives and helping those in need when it happened.
One of the things that he brought out was that unified command made the incident successful. A unified command is when the heads of all the emergency service branches are in one area and make a joint decision on what they're going to do. They make what's called an incident action plan. And because state police, sheriff's department, fire department, EMS, highway department, they were all in on the same plan and was executed with a great success. Sometimes you're sitting there listening to these speakers and you go, holy cow, we don't have it so bad. When they're relating their story and the hardships they have in their county, you look back, look yourself in the mirror and say, things aren't as bad as we think they are. Actually, we're doing pretty good here. So that's the talk. And all the topics, right after coffee, we talk about them. People, man, we had a call like that. Or we've never had a call with a bus like that or a mass casualty incident like that in our district. It's good to bring out what went right, what we could do better. Yeah, the networking is good. And, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years that I've gone, you're seeing the same people. And it's good to see them and how you've been and what's going on. Oh, my gosh, we got this going on. We're doing this. And they have talked about what great things they have done, and they've talked about what they need to improve. As John would have probably told you, that networking is a great part of this conference.
John Hasha, the Sullivan County Fire Coordinator, talked also about the recruitment and retention task force that's currently going on and what initiatives they are working on.
Our Bureau of Fire Recruitment and Retention Task Force Joint Sullivan Fire Initiative is still working very hard on getting members, youth members, all age groups, and because firefighters need help across the country. It's not just here in Sullivan County. And our task force has been, we've been going to career day at schools. The most recent one was at the Sullivan County Community College. We are going to Monticello School. We've been to Sullivan West, Fallsburg, Livingston Manor. So we've been doing a lot, and we've been getting some interest from those students in the schools about joining. And the other thing that we're doing, we're working with BOCES as well, which I'm sure you're familiar with their career and tech program. We have an EMT program going right now at our training center. We have 13 students taking the EMT course, and next year that's going to double to 26. So we're trying to reach out and do a firefighter program as well, a fire science program through the career and tech at BOCES. We recently held an open house at the training center, and we had some students and parents come out, and BOCES and the Bureau of Fire staff, and everybody was there, and we talked about the program and what they could do. The other thing that we're doing is we're working with our youth bureau, the Bureau of Fire, Bureau of EMS, our law enforcement partners, and our youth bureau are putting together Emergency Services Youth Academy at the training center this summer. It's a week-long academy for people that are 14 to 16 years old, and we're going to cover various emergency topics: first aid, CPR, fire extinguishers, rescue, search and rescue techniques, auto extrication, team building, things that go on. And this is our first annual, and we just posted it the other day, sent it out socially, and it's being shared a lot, and we're hoping to get a good turnout from our youth. And the main goal is to get the youth interested in the emergency services. And hopefully if the youth gets involved, we get parents involved and get some more people joining our agencies. Just a reminder again that the burn ban is in effect. That started on March 16th and ends on May 14th. We have been very fortunate that we've had some rain, some snow, and it did cut some of our numbers down. We have had brush fires, nothing major, thank goodness. And I just want people to be aware that even though it has rained, all we need is the wind to blow and the sun to come out, and it dries the vegetation out. So please be very aware that the burn ban is still in effect until May 14th, and be conscious of what they're doing.
Jack Halchek, the deputy fire coordinator for Sullivan County, said he looks forward to next year's conference.
Obviously, the conference was a huge success. It was a great learning tool to put into my toolbox. The fire service in Sullivan County is working on the new fire brigade standards and looking to see how it's going to affect us and how we could comply with what they are expecting of us. So we're just starting to do that now, and there's going to be some trials and tribulations, I believe. And I guess you could say this probably in any discipline, that you would say that I'm not going to try it. We've always done it that way. Let me try it. And then you go, man, why didn't we do this before? But we can't let tradition interfere with our mission.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Well, that's going to do it for the local edition. Thank you so much, Patricio Roballo, for that report. And thank you, listener, for listening. Do keep on listening on air and online at WJFFradio.org. We're always live streaming, and we're always ready to take your donation. So please make your donation now at WJFFradio.org, or give us a call here, 845-482-4141.
Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive is happening now. We're asking you to reflect on the value of this station as you consider your donation. No matter how you found Radio Catskill, no matter why you listen, you can be a part of the community that makes it possible by giving now at WJFFradio.org. And when you do, let us know how you discovered Radio Catskill and what it means to you. Make your donation now at WJFFradio.org.
That's WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org, or give us a call here at 845-482-4141. We just got done with the local edition. We're getting ready for the daily that comes up next, and it's the debut of the new version of the Laura Flanders Show, which is no longer Laura Flanders Show. It's Laura Flanders' Friends, and we expect Laura Flanders to be joining us this evening. And then it's also time for Trailer Talk, and Sabrina Artell is already joining us this evening. Sabrina, thank you for coming out in person during the Spring Fun Drive.
You're so welcome.
Ooh. Try it again.
You're so welcome, Jason. It's great to be here, and always to celebrate this incredible treasure we have here in WJFF Radio Catskills. So I'm going to ask those listening, please give us a call, 845-482-4141. Or you can always donate online. It's safe and secure at WJFFradio.org.
WJFFradio.org, 845-482-4141. We're going to be looking for your support this evening. Sabrina, when I first came